Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Pick up your book bags, grab your notebooks. It's time to go on campus with Denton.
Hey, give me my theme music.
Denton Day is going to join us every Thursday on this show to talk some college football. Denton is the host of College Football Overtime on Sirius XM on Saturdays. He is the host of the Washington Commanders pre- and post-game shows on not only this station, the Team 980, but also 106.7 The Fan. And he is doing well at the BetMGM Network as a part of a show that he's involved in, not only on air, but as a producer as well. You know, I wanted to start before we get to last week and then some of the games this week, including the Maryland game. What's going on at UCLA and Virginia Tech, where both coaches were fired after last weekend? And I know it triggers some sort of window for players to immediately enter the portal. What are the rules? You might not know the answer to this, and if you don't, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I guess I've already done that. But could basically Virginia Tech's entire team bolt after the head coach was fired?
I'm not super well-versed in all of the rules, but they've never, like, no one has ever really explained them, which I think is the frustrating element of this whole process. But theoretically, yeah, when a coach is fired, you have a window, I think it's 30 days, where you can jump in the portal and just kind of go. And it's not, we've seen something like this happen before. It's usually not, at least in the middle of the season, due to fired coaches. It's due to money stuff. Remember that kid from UNLV last year got off to a 3-0 start, had that handshake NIL deal and said, I'm out of here. So we've seen it more for that rather than the firing of coaches. Usually what happens is they just kind of go and splurge at the end of the season, and it's a mass exodus.
I guess, you know, and I'm reading right now, you mentioned it, you nailed it. You know, head coaching changes trigger a 30-day window for players who wish to enter the portal and explore a transfer. I mean, you could literally bring a season to a halt with that rule, because players are bolting. I mean, you're going to get a lot of players that will say, go ahead and bolt. This will give me my opportunity to get onto the field. But it just seems so ridiculous. And we've got the multiple portal windows already in the sport. Let's talk about the sport and the games. Because you know what's interesting, Denton? I think you and I have talked about this either on the air or off the air. With all of, you know, the changes to college football and college basketball, you know, we've got a salary cap now, you know, we've had the transfer portal, we've had NIL, we've had conference reshuffling, etc. What's really interesting about that is so many people bitch and complain about how it's ruining the sport. But you know what? For me, and I can only speak for myself, when 12 noon on Saturday comes and the games begin, it is still an incredible product. And I don't feel any less passionate about the games and the sport during the season. I get upset during the off season, but once the games start, it is still, you know, you get used to where the players have landed. You get used to, you know, where the teams are. And the matchups are massive. I mean, Georgia-Tennessee last week, I mean, that could potentially end up being the game of the year, except we both know there will be another dozen just like it between now and late November. Do you feel the same way or not?
Yes, first of all, there might be one literally at noon this weekend with Texas Tech and Utah.
Yeah.
Look, if you are watching Georgia and Tennessee and you're thinking to yourself, you're sitting at home, you're sitting in a bar, wherever you're watching this thing, and you're like, this is not as fun because the guy that just jumped over a defensive back is getting paid too much money, you're a loser, right? Like, in February, we care about it. In April, we care about it. When the games are being played, you should not be caring about it.
I don't care.
Like, the one caveat is if you're losing money and then you just rage and you talk about how these players are getting paid and they can't make you money. Like, that's like the one thing. But outside of that, no. Like, I'm not watching great football games and thinking, huh, these guys are getting paid too much. I can't enjoy this. That's just not how my brain operates.
Yeah, and that game was so good in such a great environment. I was watching that game, and I texted one of my boys who was watching the game, and I just said, this is the deep end of the college football pool. Like, I'm watching that game, and honestly, it doesn't look like any of the other games that I had watched that day. The speed, the size, the skill, the athleticism, it was off the charts. And I felt badly for the Tennessee kicker. I mean, he did make the one in overtime, but it seems like, you know, they had that big win over Alabama, but it seems like more times than not, it doesn't end well for Tennessee.
No, I mean, they haven't beaten Georgia since 2016.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy because over the past couple of years, Tennessee's been good. And they, as you mentioned, they've beaten Bama in that time frame. They've been good. They just cannot get over. I don't know if it's, I honestly don't even think it's the players. There's something with Heifel mentally. He can't get over Kirby Smart. He's like the arch rival. I thought the way that he coached Heifel in the fourth quarter was atrocious. Just poor clock management, maybe not understanding math. You know, maybe he thought 5 + 3 = 9, which is why he decided to play super conservative with like 8 minutes left. I did not like the way that he coached against Kirby Smart. You kind of like, you want to talk about the deep end of the pool talent wise. Definitely. You also saw that with the coaching discrepancy. Like, there's no one that is Saban, obviously, but Kirby Smart right now is the best coach in college football. I thought he was, you know, really, really good in that, the late stages of that game. And that, you know, in this instance, that separated, I thought, the win versus the loss. And as we get deeper into the season, your coach has got to be ready to handle some big time moments. I thought Smart did a great job.
Speaking of coaches, you know, I don't trust Mario Cristobal, but with that said, I think Miami's totally legit. That offensive line is sick. They can run the football. Carson Beck, I said it 2 weeks ago, I think he's going to win the Heisman. He's now the favorite to win the Heisman. Do you agree with me that the Canes are legit? Even though, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to give out Florida tomorrow plus the short number in that game. But tell me what you think about the Canes.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I think Beck's been really, like, you're seeing the best of Carson Beck in the first couple of games for Miami, and they're not playing bad opponents. Like, it'd be different if they were doing this against Kent State 4 times, but they're not. They're playing good opponents. He's doing it against Notre Dame, even USF. While USF is not going to be as good as some of the teams that Miami plays, especially with Florida State on their schedule coming up after this Florida game, USF is a pretty decent team, and they still just completely blew the doors off of them. The nice thing for Miami and Florida this weekend, if you're a Canes fan, is that Mario Cristobal doesn't screw games up, Kevin, until November. So you get a couple of months. There's going to be a game in late October, November, where we're going to do this on a Thursday, and it's going to be all we talk about. You're like, how did he do this again? What was he thinking? One of those games is going to come. The question, though, is going to be, do they have enough talent to overcome that? And I think for the first time in a couple of years, the answer to that's yes.
I had Murray on my podcast yesterday, Tim, and he said, look, they're scheduled the next 3 weeks, Florida State. But Florida, by the way, for those of you they are not following, yes, they lost to USF. They lost to LSU in Death Valley, a game that was much closer than the final score indicated. Mm-hmm. Then they go to Tallahassee, and then they get, you know, Miller Moss, Jeff Brohm, and Louisville. I like that team, by the way. Tim's like, they're going to lose one of these next three. I'm not sure about that, but if they don't, they're going undefeated in the regular season, and that's almost a lock for a playoff.
Definitely. I think whoever goes unbeaten in the ACC, and I do think there is the potential for one of those teams, it'll either be Miami or Florida State, maybe Georgia Tech, though. I mean, Georgia Tech's schedule the rest of the way is is pretty easy. There's going to be at least one unbeaten team in the ACC, and that team is for sure getting in. And then depending who they play in the ACC championship game, there's going to be an avenue for two ACC teams, I think, to get in to the playoff once again, with likely neither of them being Clemson unless something drastically changes there.
All right, fraudulent or for real? All right, let me give you the teams. The first one I'm going to give you is Oregon.
For real. I actually think Oregon is, if you're putting Miami right now as the best team in college football, which you didn't say that specifically, but I think they could end up there.
I think they could end up as the number one seed in the playoff because of the schedule if they can get through this next 3 weeks, which I think they're the better team than the three that they're facing.
Anybody that would tell me right now that Miami is the best team in college football, I would not push back. We haven't seen enough from Ohio State and Penn State. And then LSU, I still have some questions offensively. So if you want to tell me Miami is the best team, sure. I would put Oregon pretty close behind there. I think Dante Moore's done a really good job, and I really like Dan Lanning. I want to see it against better competition, but at the same time, they whooped Oklahoma State's ass a couple of weeks ago. And Oklahoma State is a high-level Power Four team, but it's not like they were doing that to, you know, Idaho State. That's a team that has real money, that are spending real money, and they just completely destroyed them. I think it's going to be something similar this weekend against Oregon State, so I like Oregon. They're for real.
Well, we're going to find out next weekend when when they go to Happy Valley to play that defense, which, by the way, they'll be coming off, you know, a bye week. I'm not a Drew Aller guy, and we'll talk about this game obviously next week because it'll be one of the biggest games of the season next week, Oregon at Penn State. But I'm feeling like that's going to be a wake-up call for Oregon on the road against that defense. But we'll talk about that one next week. Fraudulent or for real, Florida State?
Right now, I'm going to call them for real. And part of that is because I do think Bama is pretty good, and Florida State was just better. I question their ability to be able to hold this consistency throughout the entirety of the season, but I will right now reluctantly say Florida State is for real.
Illinois.
Fraudulent. I think Indiana, I mean, that line, I was stunned by this line, Kevin. I'm sure you've looked at it.
Yeah.
Indiana laying 6.5 was very, very surprising. I like Luke Altmyer. I just don't know if I love Illinois in terms of, you know, compared to some of the other teams that you've listed. So I am going to say, seeing as they're a top 10 team, I'm going to say fraudulent for Illinois.
A&M.
I think A&M's for real. I think A&M's for real. I like Marshall.
You don't like the quarterback, though, do you?
No, I actually do. I do like the
quarterback. You like Marcell Reed?
Yeah, I think he's pretty dynamic. I don't know that he's certainly not the best quarterback. I would not put him in any of those discussions. But I do think there is something about him where he has a little bit of gamer in him. So I think if he can not make silly mistakes, I think Texas A&M, this is the best chance that they've had in a long, long time of not only just getting to the college football playoff, but being able to win double-digit games this year.
Fraudulent or for real, this is a very intriguing matchup Saturday afternoon. Oklahoma.
Oklahoma is for real, but that schedule is going to kick the snot out of them. They are in the worst spot this year, Kevin, because I really do think they're good. I think their quarterback is really good. But after they play Auburn this weekend, which will be a nice test, they get layup game against Kent State, which Kent State's going to get 70 hung on them. And then it's Texas, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Tennessee, yeah. Bama, Missouri, LSU. Sheesh. I mean, what a gauntlet that is. So I think they're for real, but I don't know that they'll be able to survive that. I do think this is the first year that a three-loss team could potentially get into the playoff, but that's going to be, if Oklahoma only has three losses by the end of that schedule, I think they'll deserve a spot in the playoffs.
Tell everybody, those that have not watched Oklahoma yet, about their quarterback, John Mateer, who right now is the second odds favorite behind Carson Beck to win the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, he is another guy that is a gamer. One, he wears a headband, and anyone that's ever wore a headband is automatically cool as a guy that used to wear a headband a lot. But I think he really processes well. You know, that was my biggest takeaway against Michigan. How many times just over the course of college football and NFL football have we seen a quarterback go up against a Wink Martindale defense and get exposed? Wink, right. Wink. We've seen it a bunch, right? He did not. I thought he handled it really, really well against Michigan. So against Auburn, it'll be a test. I think this one will be much more of a track meet than that game was against Michigan, because once Oklahoma scored a certain amount of points, they kind of knew the game was over because Michigan couldn't score. Auburn's a little bit different, but I think Mateer is going to end up being the story of what would otherwise be a Jackson Arnold revenge game. He plays quarterback now for Auburn. He was with Oklahoma last year. That was a terrible situation. Oklahoma didn't do right by him. He wasn't exactly spectacular. They move on. This should be a revenge game, but Mateer is really, really good. He can use his legs. He can make a bunch of throws. Not all the throws, but a bunch of throws. I think he's really, really good.
Georgia Tech, fraudulent or for real? The 3-0 Yellow Jackets knocked off Clemson last week.
They are for real because of their physicality at the line of scrimmage. And I think no matter who they end up playing, either in the ACC or as they go further into the season, you can't fake physicality at the line of scrimmage. That's one thing where Brent Key over the course of his career has excelled. I do feel bad for Georgia Tech, though. Depending on what happens with some other jobs across the country, he is going to be sought after like crazy. You know, if Florida ends up moving on from Napier, Key is going to be right in that discussion. He's done a great job with the program. I do think they are for real. I got a 7-1 ticket on them making the playoff that I feel really good about. I really like that team.
So Alabama gets beat and handily in the opener in Tallahassee. They've bounced back. I mean, they haven't beaten anybody unless you think Wisconsin is decent. They crushed Wisconsin in Tuscaloosa last week. I'm becoming a fan of Ty Simpson, not just as a college quarterback, but as a next-level quarterback. What do you think?
So I haven't judged him from the lens of what would he look like on Sundays, but I do think Alabama has done a really good job since that Florida State loss of using the next two games to get right. Like, that's what UL Monroe is for. That's what Wisconsin is for. Get our quarterback.
That's what Wisconsin is for. I mean, that's painful for a Wisconsin fan to hear, but it's true.
I mean, could you imagine saying that, you know, 5 years ago that Wisconsin didn't get right game for Alabama? It's crazy. But that's kind of what they are right now. You know, he didn't look good against Florida State. He wasn't seeing things. He looked very discombobulated because of the speed of Florida State. They did a really good job getting him into a rhythm. And I think Kalen DeBoer deserves a lot of credit for that. But Ty Simpson also deserves credit for that. We've seen this on several different occasions. I mean, we're seeing it right now in Texas. You get a bad game, and it just completely messes with the psyche of a quarterback. I think they've done a really good job making him comfortable, and I do think that Alabama is a really good team. Yeah, that Florida State loss, will look back on it and say maybe that was just Florida State being really good, but Bama's a good team.
Yeah, they get Georgia, I think, next week. Arch Manning, what's his issue?
He has the yips. He is not, I don't know if he's not seeing things. I mean, he's under the most amount of pressure that we have seen a quarterback under in a long, long time. You know, I know Finebaum compared it to Tim Tebow. I never was on board with that, but he is under the kind of pressure that a guy like Tebow was under because everybody anointed him as the savior of a program that has not won a championship in almost 20 years, which is crazy to say that Texas hasn't won in almost 20 years. He's not seeing it. I mean, to have the performance you did against Ohio State week number one, fine, right? First game of the season, going up against a really good defense led by an NFL coordinator that's now coaching in college. Naturally, Patricia will be able to get after a guy that hasn't played a lot of football. But to not perform against UTEP,
I know,
it's kind of embarrassing, especially given the expectations.
It was bad.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he needs to contact J.J. McCarthy and get his meditation specialist or what, but there's something going on upstairs that they need to connect, and they need to connect that soon, because if not, they're going to lose some games that would otherwise be winnable.
All right, let's finish up with Maryland. Malik Washington, stud, four-star, sought-after quarterback, from, you know, Howard County, gets the start as a true freshman. The Terps haven't played anybody yet. And, you know, you could say that they're getting an opportunity here with kind of a light Big Ten schedule. They open on the road for the first time, their Big Ten schedule, not opening on the road for the first time in their Big Ten lifetime. I'm just saying this year in Madison against Wisconsin, they are 10-point underdogs. That seems like an awful lot. But what are people in the sport saying about Malik Washington?
I think people are excited about Malik Washington, but they want to see it against bigger competition. As you know, people had been excited about Talia, and then he sees big competition, and he's not all of that exciting anymore. Same thing with Billy Edwards.
I mean, this guy's legit, though, talent-wise. Big dude, you know.
He's much better. I think talent-wise, he's the best quarterback that Maryland's had in a a long, long time. Yeah. If he can perform against Wisconsin and Maryland can beat Wisconsin, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility. I was stunned that line was 10.5. I think that will completely change the narrative surrounding not just this year's Maryland football team, but the potentially Maryland football teams to come. I think it makes Locke's job a lot easier in terms of recruiting if you can point to a guy and say, hey, we have a quarterback. Come play with him.
You know, that's a really good point, and it makes this game crucial, actually. If Maryland somehow could go into Madison and win Sunday to get to 4-0, beating Wisconsin's not a big deal, but as a 10-point underdog and Malik Washington looks the part again, they've got some interesting games. I mean, they should be able to beat, you know, Washington at home, should be able to beat UCLA on the road. You know, Nebraska's going to be tough. They're coming here. They got Indiana. But they would be headed towards a bowl season with this kid, and then the pressure would be off Locks, and he'd come back next year. You know, there's a lot going on. Because if this season goes sideways, Locks, who knows what will happen with a new AD, then the quarterback leaves, and you're starting all over. Speaking of coaches, last question. Is Dabo in trouble or not?
No, because I don't think there's anybody better. You know, as annoying as Dabo is, and he is annoying, and some of the things that he said this week are very annoying, there's not a lot of better options right now for Clemson that does not involve a complete and total overhaul. You know, Venables would have been the guy had he still been there, but when he left, I mean, they're not going to get excited about either the offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator coming up and taking his job. And I would imagine they want to keep that in-house. So I don't think he's going anywhere. But, man, this season has been tough for Clemson.
At the Denton Day on X on Twitter, he'll be in Sunday for the pregame show. I'll be on it with him. He'll do the postgame show as well following the game. Thanks. I'll talk to you later.
All right, see ya.
Charch next. We'll do fantasy football with him.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Interesting college football season so far. It's really, it feels very wide open. It feels like there are 30 teams minimum, probably more than that, that could potentially make a playoff run this year. Charch is with us, as he is every Thursday in this spot, at Paul Charchian on X on Twitter. Fantasy Football Weekly and CHOP are the podcasts. Before we get to, you know, fantasy football talk specifically, not that it's that unusual. I think, you know, it always grabs the headlines and people think, wow, this is a run of injuries at the quarterback position that is unique. It isn't necessarily unique, but Burrow, Daniels potentially this weekend, McCarthy in Minnesota, Brock Purdy in San Francisco, Justin Fields, like, you know, what do you make of this? Does it feel different? Because I think we say that every year when it happens.
Yeah, I think it is a little different, Kevin, in that it's all hit us at once. You know, it's not uncommon for these quarterback injuries, but, you know, everything sort of detonated in 1 week and early in the season. So it's not like these players have been ground down over the course of many, many weeks.
Right.
Here we are two weeks in, and we've got five starting quarterbacks potentially not playing. I mean, you know, I think four for sure, almost certainly, and one's still a question mark there in Washington. So, yeah, it's early already to have to go to some backup plans, but that's, you know, that's part of the fun of fantasy football as well, is, you know, trying to find out who's agile, who's staying on their toes, who's going to make some key pickups, and who's going to be able to ride out their find wins even without your starting quarterback. And that's, I don't know, it's part of the fun of it, I think, if you embrace the challenge.
You know what Robert Saleh said after they played the Saints last week? He said Spencer Rattler is special and is going to be a very good quarterback.
Okay, very good is a stretch. I'm not ready to go that far, but the observation I tweeted halfway through that game was Spencer Rattler is non-awful. That kid can.
That's your new thing this year. Not awful.
Not awful. Yeah. The kid can, he has a requisite NFL arm. And I do kind of like him. And the fact that he won that quarterback battle really early in training camp was one of the indicators that, you know, there was a chance for him to be good. And I was really impressed. And suddenly you look at the Saints, you don't think of the Saints as having a lot of weapons, but Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, and their tight end, if you haven't figured this out already, and you should have through 2 weeks, because he's like the number two scoring fantasy tight end. Juwan Johnson's legit. So they've got, and you can throw to Alvin Kamara. So they've actually got a plethora of weapons for Spencer Rattler there.
Yeah. I was thinking about this because, of course, your team is Minnesota, the Vikings. If Kevin O'Connell can do with Carson Wentz what he did with Sam Darnold, he is the quarterback whisperer. Because Carson Wentz, when he was on the field here in 2022, he was so bad, Charch, and had the yips, basically. If he ends up, I mean, what are the expectations of the next two to four games with Carson Wentz in Minnesota?
You know the old adage, you have to be a pretty good pitcher to lose 20 games?
Yeah.
So here's your Carson Wentz version. On Sunday, he will become the first quarterback in NFL history to play for six different teams in 6 years and start a game for each one.
Wow.
That's
Philly.
That's
the Colts, the Redskins. Wait, where was he before Kansas City last year?
He was with Kansas City. And then before that, it was the Rams in 2023. And I think you've hit them all. Philly, Indy, Washington, Rams, Kansas City, Vikings.
And he had a start for all of those teams. Wow.
He did. I mean, got a start for all of them. Now, there's an asterisk on some of these. They were like week 17, like Kansas City. It was the week 18 game. But still.
But what does that speak to? That speaks to two things that are true. Both things can be true. He is talented, and he's also a pain in the ass. Right? I think that's it. I mean, he was certainly that here.
Yes. Yes. You know, maybe things will be
different
in Minnesota.
That way. He was super sensitive and difficult to coach, I think.
So maybe he has now been knocked down so many pegs that, you know, it's going to be a little bit like Baker Mayfield, who said, you know, he had to go to ground zero and be built back up. And, you know, perhaps he's going to be baptized in the holy waters of Lake Minnetonka with Kevin O'Connell, just like Kirk Cousins, just like Sam Darnold, just like Josh Dobbs. And maybe he can be an average NFL quarterback, and maybe the Vikings are actually going to be better with him than they were with J.J. McCarthy, who played eight quarters, seven of which were pretty bad. And, you know, he had one amazing quarter, fourth quarter against the Bears. And there's a chance that Wentz, good enough to hang around on all these rosters, not get cut, be the number two guy in many cases, maybe he'll just play average NFL football and the Vikings offense will get a little bit better over these next few games.
You know, I love your fan base. It's similar to ours and probably similar to most. It's incredibly reactionary, very emotional. The Viking, Viking Nation is really into it. And I followed it from afar, you know why, because Cousins was the quarterback and I'm a big fan of Kirk. And I saw the ups and downs with the reaction. You know, one week he's the best ever, the next week he's the worst ever. But I'm curious with McCarthy, and he looked awful. I mean, awful, with the exception of that one quarter. But we know this. It's two games. Like, how could you ever come to a conclusion? But is the fan base, you know, are fans and media members already bailing on J.J. McCarthy?
People are nervous. Yeah, they're nervous. But they also recognize that the offensive line has been bad.
No Darrisaw.
No Darrisaw, the star left tackle, and the guy behind him hurt too, by the way. Vikings could be missing for this game. And they're favored, by the way, which I don't understand. They could be missing 11 starters on both sides of the ball, between both sides. 11 starters, if you include fullback as a starting position. If you don't, then let's call it 10. This team is in desperate trouble from an injury standpoint. And, you know, that's played a factor here, too. JJ's also, the accuracy on his passes have been bad. Oof. He hasn't made fast decisions. You know, it's troubling right now, but, you know, there are a lot of quarterbacks who've turned out great that
of
had
course.
Really, really rough starts.
Yeah. All right, we're talking to Charge. So back to just the quarterbacks in general. If you had one of the guys that went down, if you've got Jaden Daniels, you're scrambling for a quarterback right now, who's out there that can be picked up?
Go get Bengals backup Jake Browning going up against Minnesota, who he's already beat once, by the way, as a starting quarterback. He's one of the best backups in the league. He started seven games and played most of an eighth game last week. He has thrown at least one touchdown in all seven games that he has started. And he's actually run in touchdowns, four scores rushing in the last eight games. And a side note for bettors out there, right now he's plus 850 to score a rushing touchdown. You might want to hit that. And Jake Browning, he's got Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins to throw to. And as I just mentioned, Vikings riddled on defense with injury. So Jake Browning to me is the target to go get, even ahead of bottom tier normal starting quarterbacks of the, you know, Cam Ward, Russell Wilson, you know, Bryce Young level. I would go get Jake Browning.
We had a lot of running backs taken in this last draft. It was supposed to be, you know, one of the best running back drafts in recent years. Gentes, I mean, they got issues along the offensive line. The Hamptons looked very pedestrian. What's going on with all these rookie running backs, and what are the options if you've got one of them?
So for Gentes, get this. The Las Vegas offensive line, which you correctly said has been problematic, they're giving him negative 0.2 yards before contact.
That's unbelievable.
Think about that. His offensive line is losing him yards before contact. It's unfathomable. So there's that. And then the other thing that's really hurting Gentes, and it materialized on Monday night, his pass blocking is so comically bad that he's turned himself, the videos have gone viral, and he's losing reps to Zamir White and Dylan Lauby. I mean, you know, this is like generational running back talent coming into the NFL, and he's losing half the snaps to Zamir White and Dylan Lauby. And
yeah, he can't pass protect. Typical for a young running back in the NFL, but then you don't take him number six overall.
Perhaps not. And he's an elite pass catcher, but he's not on the field on third down because he can't block. So that's killing him too. Now, the good thing about Gentes, and way better than Omarion Hampton, who we'll talk about in a second, when he does get a smidgen of open space, he's making guys whiff. He's got the fifth best broken tackle rate among starting running backs. So Gentes, when he's given just a smidge of open space, he's making the best of it, but it hasn't come together yet. And people are understandably nervous there. For Hampton, this is a bigger worry to me because he had the same number of carries on Monday night as the blind guy did. Just 12 snaps in the game. And, you know, fortunately, Najee Harris didn't look any better, but he's a better pass blocker. So there's that. They got Denver this week. And if Omarion Hampton can't get it going here, because teams are running on Denver, they rank 28th in rushing yards allowed. They rank 31st in yards after contact. And they've got the great secondary for Denver. I mean, the way you beat Denver is you go run on them, just like Jonathan Taylor did last week. So if Omarion Hampton can't get it done here, then I think you're in full-blown emergency panic level stuff here on Hampton.
So far, and we've talked about this on the show this week, and we saw it last Thursday night, there are some very impressive defensive football teams for early in the season when sometimes, you know, tackling and other things are issues in the first few weeks. I mean, we know how good the Eagles are defensively, but Charge, the Packers are unbelievably talented on defense. Tampa is good on defense. The 49ers are good on defense. Specific to some of these teams, if you've got guys that are facing the Eagles, the Packers, the Bucks, do you just bail completely?
Packers are the only team that I would put at that level where I would say you've got, you know, you're always going to start Ja'Marr Chase, right? I mean, you know, there's a level at which you just never bench your blood.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, but for Packers, to me, is the one team that I would give real pause to almost every other tier of player, because they just look so good. It's so many aspects of the game, whether it's the pass rush, which looks fantastic. The run defense has been very good. Coverage, you know, this has turned into a very good young secondary. And it's all keyed by the fact that the Packers have drafted so well. And when you've got a bunch of high quality, high functioning players on rookie contracts, it frees up the money to go afford to pay Micah Parsons. And now, you know, the Packers, the one team that I don't think I would mess with. Another one we're going to watch closely that people aren't paying attention to, the Browns defense.
It looks really good.
Through two games, and we're gonna keep an eye on that emerging storyline.
Yeah, I mean, look, they ended up giving up, you know, a lot of points, but, you know, to Baltimore. But I watched that week one game against Cincinnati. They completely shut them down. Derrick Henry went from 169 yards against the Bills to 11 carries, 23 yards against the Browns. Yep. Miles Garrett, hand it to him right now. He's the defensive player of the year. I mean, he's
right now. Yeah.
He's spectacular. All right. Well, Thursday night football tonight. Buffalo and Miami. Is Tua off of the performance last week? Is he startable?
Not really. I mean, you know, I'll give you the angle. And last week's metrics were way better. He was a disaster in week one. And then last week, 215 yards, two scores, 81% completion rate, which is a lot of what he does. But usually that high completion rate, and I know you know this, Kevin, it's because he's a dump-off king. But this last week, that 81% completion rate was on a 10-yard passing average. Not bad. I mean, that's like the NFL norm. So, you know, that was double his week one distance downfield. And Tyreek Hill, with his longest play in over a year, unlocked last week. So they started throwing downfield. And granted, it helped that they were playing the Patriots. That looks like a really bad defense. A much tougher matchup this week with the Bills. I prefer not to start Tua. He's my quarterback 27. But your ray of hope is that he played Buffalo twice last year, played him well in both games. And, you know, Bills are 12.5-point favorites. It looks, you know, this game plan, the game script might have to be a lot of passing. And when Tua throws more than 40 times in a game, which he's done 6 or 7 times in his career, he averages 333 yards and 2.5 touchdowns. So if you see a blowout coming, like the point spread would suggest, just through sheer volume, Tua could be startable.
Meantime, Josh Allen, and I saw this in your notes, the worst fantasy performance of his career in a 30-10 win over the Jets. I mean, James Cook's a pretty good option. They've got good running backs. They've got a running game. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to do it every week for them.
He doesn't, but he's going to tonight. Josh Allen is my number one ranked player at any position for this week. Miami has already seen, from just a rushing standpoint, 17 quarterback rushes against them. That is the second highest number. And they've allowed 3 quarterback rushing touchdowns. That is the most. But then there's this. Miami has 4 cornerbacks on IR and 2 other members of their secondary who are probably going to miss this game. Their matchups in the secondary, their personnel in the secondary, is a disaster. Rasul Douglas, a streak free agent 3 weeks ago, is starting. They've got 2 rookies, 5th rounders, starting in their secondary. So Josh Allen, air and ground, game on, bounce back coming games coming for Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, who are down. Josh Palmer's a dart throw here. I love every part of the Bills offense tonight and expect big things.
All right, if Marcus Mariota starts for Washington and you're in dire need, is it a good matchup or not against the Raiders?
Well, the Raiders' secondary is pretty darn bad. They rebuilt it in the offseason, and they haven't seen any real fruition on that yet. They ranked 27th in coverage by Pro Football Focus, and they've got some real duds playing cornerback like Darnay Holmes in the slot. Deebo Samuel, just get the ball to Deebo Samuel, and he will roast Darnay Holmes. So there is some opportunities here, but You know, and Marcus Mariota, by the standards of backup quarterbacks, is, you know, he's quasi-functional and stylistically not all that different than what you've got already installed for Daniels. So, it's not that there's no hope here. The question I wanted to ask you, and I can't leave this conversation without us talking about, can we talk through the running back situation now that Austin Ekeler is done, and whether or not Jeremy McNichols will walk into that role, Kevin?
They like Jeremy McNichols a lot. They've, you know, used him at times, but usually not in the competitive portions of the game because he's a big-time special teamer, and they loved Ekeler. Eckler's going to be a big loss. It's really a mystery, Charge, because Thursday night, they couldn't protect, they couldn't get open, and yet they didn't even try to run the football with their rookie, right. You know, Kroski Merritt. So I think there's a chance we're going to see a lot more Kroski Merritt and maybe even Chris Rodriguez. But in terms of that Ekeler role, yeah, it would probably be McNichols, yes. Now, what that equates to in snap count, I don't know, because Ekeler, remember, was in there a lot on first down as well. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And McNichols doesn't have that to him, but what he might have from a fantasy standpoint is 3, 4, 5 catch upside, like Ekeler did in almost every game. And I could see him being utilized that way. I don't think he'll get the runs that Ekeler did, but I could see him getting the receptions that Ekeler did.
Always good to do this with you. Thanks. Talk to you next week. Enjoy the football.
You got it, my man. Bye bye.
Paul Charchi and everybody. We'll do our NFL power rankings next.
All right. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is finally official. Here's what's happening. The Washington Commanders are returning home to Washington, D.C. The D.C. City Council voted 11-2 to approve the RFK Stadium Revival Project. Now work can get underway for the target date of 2030. And the Nats, they fall yesterday by a score of 9-4. Brad Lord with 5 1/3 innings pitched, giving up 6 hits and 2 earned runs. Another day, another game blown by the Nats bullpen, allowing 12 hits through the final 4 frames. Nats with an off night tonight. They will kick off a weekend series versus the Mets tomorrow. That'll be at 7:10 pregame with Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler at 6:40 on 106.7 The Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Den's office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. P&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Time for our NFL power rankings. Yeah. Top 5 teams in the league and a team sort of lurking on the outside of the top 5 that we could see being in the top 5. I'll give you mine first, Max. Number 5, I think this has changed significantly from last week. Number 5, the Baltimore Ravens. I have them in my top 5. They're 1-1, but they have scored in consecutive weeks 40 and 41 points. I've got the Rams at 4. Big fan of the LA Rams right now and what they're doing on both sides of the football. Matt Stafford's playing at an exceptionally high level right now. They're good defensively. They've got playmakers on offense. They can run the football. They're balanced. I really like the Rams. The key to their whole season is Stafford staying healthy. I got the Bills at 3 in my top 5 NFL power rankings. The Eagles at 2. And after seeing last Thursday night, it'd be tough to put any other team but the Green Bay Packers at number one. You could say Philly until otherwise, proven otherwise, as the defending champs. Every season's a new season. Every week's a new week in the NFL. The Packers, both offensively and defensively, looked absolutely dominant. I don't know that there is a more talented team up front defensively in terms of the pass rush with really good connection with the back end. I mean, that guy Nixon, number 25, was awesome. I hadn't even really heard of him until last Thursday night. The Packers are my number one team. What about you, Max? Max?
You can hear me, right? That was weird.
I hear you now.
I turned the mic on, started talking, couldn't hear myself, and then you said my name. That was very weird. But my power rankings, my number one team right now is the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen, like, he seems to be well on a road. He could win back-to-back MVPs this year, depending on how the rest of this year goes. But, I mean, you say this through 2 weeks in this end of the season a lot with the Bills, but this could be that year for them, finally, that they break through, beat Mahomes, and make it to the AFC title game, if not the Super Bowl. So the Bills are my number one. At number two, I have the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, they just, that again, like you said, 40 and 41 points in back-to-back weeks. The defense, that meeting that they had, they had a defensive dinner prior to the game against the Browns to ensure that they weren't going to give up any 15-point leads in the fourth quarter anymore, so hopefully they lock in for that. Number three, I have the Philadelphia Eagles. It was kind of a toss-up for me here. I wasn't really sure whether to put them ahead of my number four team or behind my number four team. I ended up going with what I know and sticking the Eagles at number three. Number four is going to be the Green Bay Packers. That pass rush, incredibly formidable. Brian and I were throwing around some Jaden Reed stats. This might be a big year for him. I think he's what?
Well, he's hurt.
Yeah. Was it Jaden Reed or was it Dontavian Wicks?
Reed's hurt.
Reed is hurt. Dontavian Wicks. See, Packers wide receivers, I get them all mixed up. Dontavian Wicks is top 10 in separation and win rate right now. So they've got an option for number one still, and I think that might be going. That might be a deep connection, going into the rest of this year. But my number five team, just coming off a big win against the Raiders. Chargers look good, man. Jay Harbaugh, he's what, number three, I think, in MVP right now, in MVP betting. So yeah, I think this could be a big year for them, especially if Quentin Johnston has found his hands. So,
all right.
Yeah, that's my top five.
You went AFC heavy up top. I went NFC heavy up top. The team that's sort of lurking, look, I mean, Tampa, the Lions, the Chargers, you could even consider the 49ers. We'll see. I mean, they don't have Purdy here. I think, again, this week, Mac Jones played well. But I do think that Detroit proved last week, look, Chicago may be terrible, but putting 52 up in this league is hard to do, along with 500 plus yards. They looked like they did last year offensively, which is why you really have to, consider the Packers for what they did to Detroit in week one. This is such a good Monday night game, Detroit at Baltimore at M&T Bank. But after that, they got, the Browns, the Bengals, who are banged up. I like the Lions to perhaps maybe pull it off Monday night. And if they do, we'll be talking about them as a top five team not before very long. What about you? All right, let's get to a break. Witt Jr. and Kingsbury are both talking, so we'll have some of what they said. We'll do that and more after these words from a few of our sponsors.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.